if you're going to build a house, it makes sense to start with a plan. You need to know where the kitchen is going to go, the bedrooms, the bathrooms, and you're going to have a good idea of what materials you're going to need to put that whole house together. You'll look up contractors and you'll do all of the various administrative tasks before you even start putting that house together to be sure that everything is buttoned up. Because building a house, it's a centralized task. It's not something you just invent as you go along. I mean, not if you don't want to waste a lot of money and resources. And the one thing that every home builder really, really wants when they begin construction is to have a great blueprint, to have those plans available and in front of them in an easy to read way so that you know what you're going to get when you embark on the project. Now, for home building, blueprints make a lot of sense. But I was thinking about the word recently and the way we use it in terms of the body, and something, well, it sort of stuck in my craw. You've probably heard that DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, is the blueprint for the human body. It contains all of the instructions and information that your cells need to create, well, a new you, your bones, your liver, your organs, your brain, your eyes, your hair, absolutely everything in the human biological organism, and for just about every living thing on Earth, if not every living thing on Earth, needs DNA. It needs this copy of instructions to come together. But I was thinking about that term we use, the blueprint of the body, and I realized that DNA, well, it's actually not a blueprint. When you build a house, you don't give a blueprint, give the instructions to house building to every single brick. You don't give it to the kitchen. You don't give it to the doors and the toilets and the sink and everything else that goes into building a house. The house doesn't assemble itself. It is a centrally organized thing. But the crazy thing about DNA is that DNA exists inside of every cell. The instructions for building the new you, or the plant, or the bird, or a dinosaur, that those instructions are ingrained into all the parts. And when we think about this, when I think about this, it makes me fundamentally reconsider what it means to be a living organism in the first place. What does it mean that all of the instructions to make me are in all of my parts? Well, here's the synopsis, and I'm going to go into some details as we go through this podcast. But here's what I think. DNA is more like a recipe or a treaty or a list of parameters that coordinate how cells interact with each other and create proteins, but not a deterministic unfolding of the human or animal organism. This is because if the instructions are at the cellular level, the cell can't conceive of what the full body looks like. The cell only knows what is going on in the cell next door to it, or what hormones it's bathing in, or what its direct environment is. It doesn't have a plan for how it all comes together. So when we think about how DNA determines a biological form, we really have to start by thinking from the perspective of the thing that's holding those blueprints, from the perspective of the cells themselves. To make an analogy, imagine a flock of birds, of sparrows, massing together by the millions, and yet flying in some sort of coordinated shape that sort of morphs and changes, and yet the birds aren't hitting each other. They're not all crashing and coming to pieces. The birds, the flock of birds, sort of acts on its own, but each individual bird in that flock is paying attention to exactly what its neighbors are doing. And yet somehow that emerges into this greater and more complex form. I think cells operate in a somewhat similar way. Each cell has the instructions in it for what it's supposed to do when it bumps into another cell or environmental change. It spits out a protein in response to environmental conditions around it. And yet somehow that all emerges into a human. But it's not like if you open up the cell and you were able to read the DNA, you could read human out of that DNA just like it was written on paper. What the DNA actually shows is how one cell, if it's located in a kidney, will form itself into a kidney-appropriate cell. Whereas if that same cell, or you know, something from the germ line, ends up in the spinal cord, it might form nerves or bone tissue or whatever is appropriate in that immediate environment. Now, naturally, I'm not the first person to observe this strangeness of DNA and the weakness of our blueprint metaphor. In fact, 2 years ago in 2020, Sergei Pistoy, who's a cellular biologist, wrote an article for Scientific American called DNA is Not a Blueprint. And I want to read just one section of that to give you some context. DNA is not a blueprint. It's a recipe coding for thousands of different proteins that interact with each other and with the environment, just like the ingredients of a cake in an oven. Whereas a blueprint is an exact drawn-to-scale copy of the final product, a recipe is just a loose plot that gives much more room to uncertainty. Open a packet of cookies. Each one was made from the same recipe and baked in the same conditions, but there are no two that are identical. Look closely, and you'll spot hundreds of little differences, a burn here, a chocolate chip there, bumps and lumps appearing in distinct places, all because of the chaotic interactions between the ingredients and the environment. And then he goes on, a little later in the article, we do not inherit specific instructions on how to build a cell or an organ. Our DNA contains a list of biochemical ingredients, the proteins coded in the genes, and the basic rules for their assembly. Some proteins are labeled as master and can control the activity of others, while others can start a domino-like cascade of events. But the pieces self-organize into biochemical pathways, cells, and tissues without reading a manual. The genetic recipe for a cat will not give an elephant, but you can't read the DNA of an individual and see a mini-me of its features. Now, this is just not the way that we're taught to think about DNA. We don't think that the cells and the proteins are sort of assembling themselves without a real plan for how it's all going to go. It just sort of happens. It's like one cell bumps into another, bumps into another, bumps into another, and somehow all of these proteins come out and happen to form the ultimate body that we live in. Just like that flock of birds forms these crazy shapes in the sky that seem coordinated, but every individual bird has its own directions and its own environment that it is flying in. DNA and the cellular processes that make you, you, are not centralized at all. We are all part of a completely distributed effort that somehow, miraculously, results in the complete form that we inhabit our bodies. This is, again, it's strange, because we like to think of our cells as the constituent parts of our bodies as sort of, you know, inert in a way, as like objects that get pushed around, not things that have some element of agency and differentiation from one cell to another. But the fact, the very fact that they carry the instructions that make us us, puts that idea on its head just a little bit. Part of this is probably a problem with language. English is a very, very top-down language. It organizes principles from sort of a central place. A lot of people have said that English is a language of control and mastery. And while I don't want to go down that road too far, I am reminded of a book, a really, really good book by Robin Wall Kimmerer, who is a Potawatomi Native American who is also a biologist. She wrote this book called Braiding Sweetgrass, and I highly suggest it because what she does is she combines the hard scientific pursuit of knowledge that she learned as a botanist with the indigenous traditions of the Potawatomi. She actually learned Potawatomi for the book. I mean, she grew up on a reservation, but had never mastered the language. And part of her writing the book was to learn the language. And the thing that I find so amazing about the way she describes it is that in Potawatomi, things that we would consider nouns can be verbs. So when she looks out at a lake, the lake can be engaged in the act of laking. A tree can be treeing, and rocks are busy rocking. It's not a way that we think of things in English. We don't think that inanimate objects can have agency and can actually do things. But think about that cell for a second. That cell which is holding the instructions that will make you, you. Why does it hold that instructions? It's so that when one cell bumps into another cell, it knows what it needs to do in its exact local environment. It's in the business of selling. Now, there is an entire scientific philosophy built around this concept of where a bunch of parts come together and build something which is so much greater than their true sum. Now, I looked on Wikipedia to get a good definition of emergence, and what it came up with was emergence occurs when an entity is observed to have properties its parts do not have on their own, properties or behaviors that emerge only when the parts interact with a wider whole. On their own, a cell really doesn't do much. It doesn't really exist outside of the context of a body. On the other hand, the body doesn't exist without the context of cells. The body is an emergent property of the congregation of cells doing their small molecular DNA-based activity. Now, if you've been listening to this podcast for a little while, you might remember one. It was episode 2, We Are the Descendants of Evolutionary Winners, where I draw on this concept a little bit more while exploring the broader idea of the wedge and human consciousness. If you hadn't heard it, I'd suggest that you go back and take a listen to that show. Because when it comes down to it, human consciousness itself is also an emergent property of bundles of neurons coming together and creating a sense of self out of inert matter. I also have this video that looks into the weird history and science of split brain surgeries. You know, you have these two hemispheres in your brain, and researchers beginning in the 1950s began cutting the corpus callosum that connects those two hemispheres together in order to treat epilepsy. But they also found at the same time that when you cut those hemispheres in two, each brain, each side of the brain has its own type of consciousness. In fact, one brain will lie to the other side of the brain in order to come up with a different story for how it perceives the world. It is truly bizarre research that won a Nobel Prize in the 80s. And, you know, while I'll put a link down in the show notes here so you can go watch that video, the interesting thing from my perspective is it shows that bundles of neurons, or at least hemispheres of brains, seem to have their own consciousness when they're disconnected from the larger whole of the full brain. Well, what I'm looking at now with DNA is not so dissimilar from that, right? If the instructions for creating your body are in each cell, and it's up to each cell to respond to its neighbors with the instructions provided by the DNA and spit out the correct proteins and cellular structures, well, it's like saying that the parts are in charge, not the whole. Which is a pretty disturbing way to think about the body. It's disturbing to think that who we are isn't the boundary of our skin and our consciousness and the way we feel, but is actually coming up from all the individual interactions between parts. Now, what I'm not saying is that every cell has its own agency and it's going to go create its own environment and that just happens to form a human. When cells go off script and aren't following the instructions of DNA, things go haywire. You get things like cancer. You know, if all of the cells decided to just grow whenever they wanted to, you're going to have something that is incompatible with life. So actually, those DNA instructions are in a way more interesting because it's about alliances. It's about when you cell or your DNA strand of DNA are in a certain environment, here's how you should respond. So it's a perspective of looking at the world from that immediate micro environment. And yet, those little relationships, those treaties, those relationships between cells somehow form you and your body, me and my body. I can't belabor this point too much more. I am not a cellular biologist. I am not a geneticist. But I do have some facility with language. And I want you to note, and I want you to take this forward when the next person you meet who says, well, DNA is the blueprint for our cells and our body, I want you to pause a little bit and just think how complex that statement really is. Because houses don't assign their parts the job of constructing themselves. DNA is not a blueprint. Instead, it's a set of instructions, a protocol for what a cell should do when it finds itself in a particular environment, a micro environment. And somehow you have emerged because of trillions of those micro environment interactions have built you like a flock of birds. Thank you for getting out there a little bit with me on this topic. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, I really want to not only thank you for listening to me for, I guess, right now, 18, 19 minutes, but if you think that there's something useful in here, I would love you to share this episode with a friend. That is how podcasts grow successful. It's not through tweets and Instagram posts and Facebook posts. It's because I said something that connected directly to you, to your consciousness, and you said, hey, this is interesting. And then you shared it with another person who you thought might be interested. And I'm hoping that you'll share this with one of your friends or family members. Thank you again so much from Pokey Bear LLC in Denver, Colorado. This is Scott Carney Investigates.